Previously on Son of a Ginger, Mason reviews Arrested Development.
It was good.
Beth Marcinko joins the cast.
Hey!
And Patrick Baylor just tries to do his best Ron Howard impression. Is it working?
Is it yet?
Hello all, and welcome to yet another episode of Son of a Ginger. I'm your host, Patrick Baylor.
I'm Mason Moreau.
And here is our special guest, Miss Beth Marcinko.
Yes, I'm here.
All the way from sunny Destin, Florida.
No, not at all.
Beth does come from the world of radio, though, so it's kind of fun to be in the presence of a pro.
Wow, thank you. I wouldn't consider myself a pro, but I appreciate the compliment.
How are we doing so far in terms of radio quality?
Quality? Oh, I mean,
yeah.
I think
radar setup, Beth.
This setup is great, but I mean, I work in a professional studio sometimes, so it's a little
what
hard
are you
to
saying?
Compare.
This
when
isn't
you...
a professional the... studio.
It is a great home setup.
And we are in a different studio. We're in Mason's brand new apartment that he just moved into earlier today.
All these personal details.
Yes. Yeah. So take
we
his
get
tax form,
son of a ginger.
Very
we get
personal.
To the real facts.
The real facts about family and friends. Speaking of family and friends, we got a wild couple of TV families and friends to tell you about from the TV family of Netflix, who just put out a couple of comedies that are like, I'd say like their bread and butter, comedic tentpoles, if you will, with season 5, part 1 of Arrested Development, and season 4, part 1 of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And I think what they put both of these out in parts so they could be an Emmy consideration.
That's what you said.
Right? That's
yeah,
what
that's,
I said.
That's what we heard from you.
I'm trying to bring conversation in, but how do y'all feel about the parters?
I mean, I think we, just from our discussion, you know, we have decided that Arrested Development could have been a lot better. I mean, the original seasons were higher quality, in my opinion, than what Netflix has put out so far. And I thought Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt was excellent as always.
Yeah. So, like, now getting into, I guess, the rest of development discussion, do you think, based on what Mitch Hurwitz did with season 4 and then putting out this first part of season 5, do you think, like, he'll wait till to, like, you know, hear some response and maybe change up and re-edit what season 5 is like and maybe reshoot some stuff? Because for context, with season 4, which was obviously very fragmented for whoever is reading up, the creator Mitch Hurwitz re-edited them to be like a new, like to feel like more like seasons 1 and 3. So do you think like he might do that if like there's some bad response to this first part?
I don't know. I think season 4 was such a... It had such a unique structure that sort of needed the re-edit to make it feel a little bit more like it was Arrested Development. But with season 5, it has that structure already. Just like the content within that structure is just really not, it was subpar compared to other seasons.
It's a little meh, you think?
Yeah.
A little
meh.
A little Arrested. Arrest the creators, huh?
Yeah, maybe something like that. No, I mean, I definitely agree. I think that, you know, just content-wise, like, you can't really beat the quality of the first few seasons. I think especially because you had those running jokes that they kind of have cut off, you know, it doesn't have the same feel.
So that's the thing, yeah. So with this season, it really, I guess what, it picks off where season 4 left off, like, very quickly, right?
Yeah, it picks up right after the punch in the face. Actually, it sort of picks up in moments that precede the end of season 4, right?
I think so, because again, so I recently watched like the re-edited version, so some stuff maybe a little bit jumbled.
Okay.
For my memory based on what it used to be, but I think that punch in general where George Michael punched Michael in the face for dating Rebel Allie, played by Isla Fisher.
Isla Ilse?
I don't know, she's married to Borat. That's all I care about.
I also always thought that she was Carrie Fisher's illegitimate daughter, or just her daughter in general because of the Fisher name, but apparently she's Ron Howard's illegitimate daughter, at least in the show.
I don't think
and
she
she's
is
Australian,
real...
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought she like did like the thing that Madonna did where she did have an American accent and then just like...
Oh, right, and then switched the Madonna effect.
Look, I'm cool.
Madonna,
look at me.
Nicki Minaj. She's just joining the pantheon of other famous people.
Don't you knock Nicki Minaj.
Menages.
I put her in a pantheon.
So it sounds like y'all are both pretty meh, pretty indifferent already of season five.
I'm not indifferent. I did not like it.
Oh, there you go.
For me, Arrested Development was my show. It was the show that I liked more than Parks and Rec, The Office, any of those shows. That was the show that, when all of those shows were on, was like the one that I really thought was hilarious. And so seeing it have this like downhill slope was just kind of dumb.
I think that's really interesting because so many of those shows have had like a really renewed interest on Netflix. And I think when Arrested Development, like when only the first three seasons were on before Netflix took it over, having those be your examples of those shows that you didn't care as much about, but now that I think have such a renewed life, and you know, now we're kind of like about the new Arrested Development, I think that that's just like a really interesting comparison to make.
Yeah, because I think thanks to Netflix, you know, Arrested Development got a major, much larger audience. Like, I remember in high school, I think you did get me on Arrested Development way back when and watched those first couple of seasons. So, and this is, I think, at least, like, there have been reboots and renewals, but I feel like, you know, in the current age that we live in, this was one of the very first ones that got that, wow, look at all this fan reaction. Let's just make more. Let's get round up the cast together. And what stunk about this season is, like, it was cool seeing the cast together, and now actually together instead of green screened in, or, you know, the weird schedules that happened.
This season?
Because of season
Talking
four.
About this season?
Well, we'll get to that one character that got green screened in, but everyone else was mostly in the same room. But what stinks is that they weren't at their best. I've seen all these actors just do so much better. You know, seen Jeffrey Tambor win Emmys in Transparent, seen Tony Hale nominated, I think won a couple Emmys over in Veep.
Seeing Jason Bateman in Ozark.
I mean, Will Arnett in BoJack Horseman. All of them have been in better stuff. Jessica Walter in Archer. Like, all of them did better stuff, have been in better stuff.
Seeing Portia de Rossi be an excellent Ellen's wife.
Yes, she's great at that. And she was, oh yeah, she was also like in Scandal.
Was she in Scandal?
Like, that was like her last thing.
Oh yeah, she's really good in Scandal. I haven't watched that in a little while.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, they all had done stuff, and they all succeeded in Arrested Development. And seeing them now together was cool for a second, but you could see them phone some stuff in.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is this season seemed to me to be defined by these, like, phoned-in performances and, like, this half-assery.
Yeah, it's just, it's really disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Very disappointing.
And I think one thing that disappointed me, and we can start getting into some plot now, in that the plot was kind of boring. Like, there wasn't some fun thing that kind of, like, kept them together, kept them all going. Or, like, there wasn't a thing that I'd be excited to see the end for. It's like, the big thing that was advertised to us was Lindsay is now running for congresswoman, governor, something of the sort. While then it's like, oh, but where's Lucille too? Who knows?
Right, and it's kind of like wrapped up in this mystery that you're not really motivated to care about very much.
And then neither are really touched upon too much in this first batch of episodes that we got.
Or they're kind of overdone, even. I mean, like, not touched upon, but then, like, when they do talk about them, it's just, like, it's the only thing. And I think that that's something that Arrested Development has sort of lost, is that versatility that it used to have. Like, it used to be a lot quicker and a lot more well-rounded.
Yeah,
definitely.
Completely agree.
And, like, there are a lot of jokes that fall flat, a lot of, like, even, like, straight-up scenes that are, you can tell, are meant to be hysterical, but just don't end up being that way.
Yeah, they just totally fall flat.
Like, it was funny to them in the writer's room. They were cracking up about it, but then, you know, maybe didn't audience test it, or didn't feel the need to audience test it because, hey, this is season five of this beloved show. People will watch this.
Meh. And, you know, it's funny that you'd bring up that there's not this thing to, like, motivate all the characters and have, like, things. There's something that unifies the family or around something, right? So, like, the reason it's called Arrested Development in the beginning is because Michael Bluth, or George Bluth, whatever his name was, George Sr.,
yeah,
got arrested, right? And then the family develops Arrested Development. Huh. So, now Buster is arrested. And it's like, I feel like one of the first things they sat down and said was, all right, who's going to be arrested? Because we have to have someone arrested.
Yeah, it did seem... it didn't seem to fit very well. I mean, I think kind of having Buster be this like scapegoat almost for this, you know, this joke that they want to carry on doesn't really work as well.
They said like it was easier to get these actors for scheduling, but I think, you know, Veep was actively being filmed while this was being filmed, at least parts of it. So I wonder if it's like, hey, Tony Hale's doing Veep and he's in that way more. Let's just put him in prison and keep him out for a couple of episodes. And then for some episodes, only have him in like for a scene. I'm sure, like, you know, as we know in the filming aspect, that probably only took a couple days to film just in what, one location, one little jail cell?
Scheduling-wise, I guess you're, like, you're probably right. They could have written him into jail so that he, because he had other commitments.
Right, and scheduling-wise, the biggest scene was the parade at the end.
Yeah, that was the toughest thing that really had everyone. Otherwise, it's still like, hey, actor A, B, and C in this room, actor D, E, and F in this other location. Cool, this works. This is great. We still didn't see that full straight up ensemble really in like one episode where they go into the beach house, right?
The beach house, and then also when Michael finds them in the apartment and Lindsay's doing the interview. And I think is that the last time we see Lindsay?
We see Lindsay in like two episodes.
Yeah.
And like the other big problem is so I guess in the in between, I believe that Portia de Rossi just straight up retired from acting. And I think only pops up in like a thing or two here and there. And otherwise, I think just is enjoying, you know, living her life, just doing her thing. Not really, I don't think she needs the money.
Well, yeah, obviously, I don't think she needs the money. But she also, I follow her on Instagram. She and Ellen just took a trip to Africa to promote a charity that she works with, I believe.
Yeah, she's busy doing humanitarian work. She doesn't need to go back to the show that, like, you know, definitely helped get her famous. But she doesn't need to go back to it necessarily. Like she doesn't need to.
Right, exactly. But I don't necessarily think that I don't think any of the actors need the show, which is something that we already talked about. Obviously. I think that if any of them didn't want to be in it, like they just wouldn't be in it. I think what really keeps the actors coming back is that, you know, A, you make money, obviously it's good to be working. But also that, you know, the show was so beloved and like it continues to be beloved, even though the quality isn't necessarily where it was.
From what I remember reading is that most of the actors love doing it, love the characters that they play on the show. And that was, I guess that was another thing that just seemed so disappointing to me watching, is it doesn't seem like they really liked, like you said, they had all moved on to bigger and better things at this point.
Yeah. And like George Michael used to be such an earnest, like, amazing, young amazingly boy. Like nerdy, awkward character. Exactly. He's such a dork.
Now he's a little sleazy, right?
Yeah. Not only that, but just, you know, he and his dad had such a strong relationship. And to see that disintegrate before your eyes makes both of them a little less sympathetic, which I think is something that really kept the show alive.
Yeah. So, like, of the other storylines, like the biggest one that really goes through all the episodes. So, like, you know, we were advertised, you know, this Lindsay Bluth running for Congress thing was going to be the big one, is touched upon in maybe an episode and a half. The biggest one, though, is George Michael and Michael are very tense and fighting after realizing that they dated the same person. And then the series of eight episodes is them, like, dodging each other, one not trying to talk to the other, one trying to, like, lie to the other. And it was exhausting. Like, Mason, what'd you think of it?
Yeah, I didn't like it. One funny thing that I think came out of that storyline was that little slow motion fight thing that happened in the hallway.
Oh, okay, that was funny. Yeah,
that made me laugh because it caught me off guard. But that was in like the first episode.
Yeah,
and the rest of it really didn't. And it was like focused on the scuba trip, symbolizing them.
But that came out of nowhere,
and like, it's like, okay, scuba trip. He didn't like scuba diving when you took him scuba diving when he was a kid. I don't know, man.
And it was just this giant theme that they keep talking. Like,
it's just a
mess. Felt so random.
Yeah.
It felt random and just very manufactured. Tension felt like, I understand why it happened, but yeah, just they told us, hey, here's some more tension and here's some old things that don't matter.
Right. I think they were just trying to do what the old Arrested Development did really well, is like take something that seems irrelevant, make it relevant and carry it through, but it just wasn't executed to the same degree. I think like that's really what we keep coming back to, is that, you know, as much as we love these characters and have loved the show, like it's just not carried through to the same level that it was.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to the most like iconic Arrested Development moments, right? The recreation of the Creation of Adam episode. Like those episodes, they're all defined by this crazy elaborate house of cards that just tumbles in the most hilarious way possible.
Yeah.
And that never happens in this whole season.
You could kind of say the end of the season in episode 8, the end of this half season, but I wouldn't say it was a house of cards. House of Cards. That's a TV show. I don't think there was really much leading up to it, because it was just what, like, the only joke that they had that recurred was the Keystone Cop thing. That was kind of it. And otherwise, it was meh.
I guess we shouldn't judge it too hard because it's only half of a season.
Very true. Because, like, the next half could come and then it'd be the best thing on television for all we know.
We'll see.
Hopes. So, a lot happened. Not a lot happened, but, like, a lot happened with our different characters, I guess. Are there some character storylines y'all dug? Beth, I'll start with you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say maybe.
Maybe what?
Maybe there were some that she enjoyed.
I always enjoy Maybe as a character, just because she, you know, all the characters are wacky, but she has this kind of unique, I guess not unique. She's vindictive, like her mother and like her grandmother. But she goes about it in such a different way. And I think that she thinks that she is so much smarter than all of them, where all of the other characters have this, they also think they're smarter, but they don't necessarily carry it out the way that Maybe can, even though like her hijinks are obviously disrupted to move the plot and like make it hilarious and tumble down like we were talking about. But I think her dressing up as like a 75-year-old is hilarious.
Yeah, she had a nice little ruse. Yeah, and I've really liked Aaliyah Shawkat after watching the first couple of seasons of Search Party. Another great show. Highly recommend it. So yeah, Aaliyah was good as Maybe. What about you, Mason? What excited you?
Well, so I've become a big fan of Kyle Mooney and Good Neighbor stuff now on SNL. And so it was fun seeing him pop up in Arrested Development. And I liked him and David Cross working together. That was funny, and they were able to play off each other pretty well. But I still feel like Tobias was slightly underwritten. Pushed him into this hole where he's trying to act like everyone else and not...
He's not true to his original character.
Right.
Because, like, they went with the joke with him that, like, oh, who's this young man with you? And then, you know, goes into the running joke that everyone knows Tobias is gay, but he's not actually gay type of thing and all that stuff. And they kind of beat that into the ground.
Right.
But otherwise, like, what was Tobias's... I feel like Tobias had nothing to do.
So I think, like, the way his character is written seems like what the writers are, you know... It's like they're just trying to figure out what to do with him, and Tobias is trying to figure out where he belongs in the family. And it kind of feels like a cop out that like they just exactly almost. They just wrote him like, we don't know what to do with him. What is his character going to do?
And we don't know what to do with him because he doesn't know what to do with himself either.
Exactly.
And then now let's pair him with someone that has some time off because SNL isn't filming right now, and have them make different comedies together. He. As they go on little road trips. Yeah. I guess it was good to see him do stuff. I'm going to be honest, Mason. I'm going to disagree with you. I thought he was the weakest thing happening, other than Lindsay. But Lindsay didn't even exist in that.
Okay.
But I really dug Job's stuff.
I disagree with you. I hated the Job stuff.
I thought... Well, what I liked is... I think, and it's just building on whose character is from BoJack, and BoJack is one of my favorite shows, in that it's just, he just has a little bit of existential dread as well in this season, and as he struggles with being gay, and that I think he actually is gay, and then he's all about and wondering about Tony Wonder.
I think it like kind of makes sense in that, you know, he's like portrayed as a super macho guy who, you know, is always trying to get laid. I just think it's, again, like, it kind of comes out of nowhere, you know?
Same. Same.
I didn't necessarily feel like it was true to his character. I think if they had done something more like what they do in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, one of the characters comes out as bi. And that made sense because he kind of is like, well, I was married and I have this child and I love women, but I'm like looking at this man and I also love men. Like, kind of I think that if, you know, Job had kind of that experience, it would have fit into his character better. But even so,
like, if he was bi curious and not just full on homosexual.
Right.
Because I guess it did just happen out of like a couple random episodes in season four. And then what the season did in general, it really just doubled down on a lot of the storylines that it established in that season. So it doubled down on Job being gay for sure. So Mason, like, continue your thought of why you hated everything about it. Is mostly Beth's sentiments?
Well, yeah, I think Beth pretty much summed it up. It seemed like it came way out of left field and it didn't make a whole bunch of sense for Job's character.
I just thought that closet bit was really funny, where he buys the closet store.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. That's like one of those like kind of classic Arrested Development bits that like you're looking for that I wish there had been more of.
Yeah.
And when he bought the dentist office for the Bluth company, that was another one of those bits.
Yeah, so like it still shows his goofy screwballness. I would say I think none of us got the Job that we were used to, but new Job was fun too, right?
New Job is okay.
Right?
So I guess, you know, I sort of have like a personal, not distaste for Job, but he's never been my favorite character.
Oh, definitely not.
Like being an older sibling and having an older sibling portrayed in such a way where like he just wants all of the success because he's the older sibling. And that just never really vibed with me because I don't feel like I'm that with my
sibling. So your family also has four siblings. Who are you? Are you the George Michael? Are you the Michael in this situation?
I don't know. My family's nothing like...
You're not Buster?
Maybe I'm Buster.
That's the thing. I hope the rest of the Moreau clan isn't like the Bluth
clan. I love
clan.
My mom like Buster loves his mom.
Aww. No, I'm just kidding. We love you, Amy.
That's weird.
Yeah, that is weird.
You know what also is weird? Is that we got a lot more Ron Howard narration in this than any past seasons. And Ron Howard in general.
I wonder how he was able to do that along with directing Solo.
Which we reviewed in the last podcast. Check it out.
Were you excited that there were many more gingers featured?
Yeah, very.
Sons of Ginger.
Many daughters of gingers in this.
Yes, daughters of gingers. Yes.
I enjoy the Howard clan in general and how they laugh when they're uncomfortable. I think that might have been one of my favorite parts too.
So that was kind of a fun bit of that for one episode. I'm not sure what number it was, but we do go into the Howard clan's house and see... You know, we just keep building on the Rebel and George Michael, you know, thing happening.
That love triangle with...
The crazy love triangle. So that was fun just for those couple of, like, Howard bits. And those are also just overtly self-referential. Just, hey, haha, the guy that makes this is in it now, and he's making fun of himself. It's so funny. His dad was in it. His daughter was in it. Like, actual Bryce Dallas Howard was in it. Rance Howard was in it. That was cool to see them. At least the first episode... within now the narration world really annoyed me in that I would say what the first episode was just like, oh, hey, remember what happened in season four? Cool. Well, that's what this episode is now for 16 minutes. And oh, cool. Now the episode's going, oh, just kidding. On the next Arrested Development.
Right. Just to like remind you what happened.
That's what the first episode seemed to me of this season was like. So.
Yeah. That it's again, just kind of disappointing.
To me, I really like the narration when it's a joke that you don't expect, right? And then it, like throughout this first half of the season, it seemed like more and more it seemed like there was going to be a quip from the narrator or something. The narrator's not supposed to be reacting to what's happening until he is.
Right. It was more of like a story crutch than, you know, a comedic interlude.
Right.
Yeah. That being said, I think his stuff did get funnier as it went on later in the season. The latter episodes definitely felt stronger, but like those first couple were just like I wasn't in a rush to finish this season after those first couple episodes. Like, you know, I watched other stuff and then I was like, maybe I'll watch season five next or do other things. So that's the rest of development. So we know that there's going to be a season five part two coming out, and you know, this one is trying to get some Emmy consideration. You think it will?
Maybe. I wouldn't.
Maybe for Elijah Shotcat, right?
Maybe. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't have high hopes for it in terms of awards.
It's cool to see, and I'm excited for the next few just to see, I guess, how this wraps up, because I don't imagine them to have a season six, just because it seems very hard to wrap these folks together.
And then if Portia's actually retiring completely from acting.
Yeah, so that's, I don't think they should be making any plots centered around actors that aren't there, so hopefully it'll just be more Michael-focused, more...
Yeah, or maybe they've already shot all of her scenes. Who knows?
Well, you know what? And I think it was, it all has already been shot. So
okay,
if they'll just re-edit it, who knows? What I hope they don't re-edit, and I'm very excited for a part two of already, is The Unbreakable, Kimmy Schmidt.
They alive, damn it. It's a miracle.
Women are strong as hell.
Women are strong as H. And this was...
If these shows are any indication... The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt was way better than Arrested Development.
Agree.
For sure. And like we said, this one did the same thing of put these first few out, hope we get Emmy consideration. And consistently, this has been an Emmy contender. Like Titus Burgess has always been nominated, I believe, right? And then I think now Ellie Kemper is the Unbreakable and incomparable Kimmy Schmidt. As well.
See, I was afraid that she would be typecast as her role as Erin in The Office, you know, and it's cool to see her sort of really break out of that and sort of become a character that's way better than Erin.
Well, you know, I see, or at least in the beginning, I kind of saw like shadows of Erin. I mean, obviously, like Kimmy is such a unique and different character from anything I've ever seen on television in terms of a leading lady. But I think that like she still retains like that, you get that sweetness that Erin had, obviously, and yeah. You know,
just amped to 10.
Exactly.
So this season was fun in that this also, I guess, what picked up on some of like the, you know, the season three cliffhangers. And you'll know if anyone, Beth, because you watched season three and then immediately season four, right?
Yeah, I did.
So, because like what season three ended with Kimmy going to this company that she works for, I think, and then, you know, then Jacqueline shows up in the same company as like an agent and decides that she can be an agent.
Right. The dog company that she transitions from and then into.
Yeah. So yeah. That's the thing. Like, that's why I'm also excited that they're breaking up these seasons in parts, because, you know, I'll watch all of Kimmy Schmidt when it comes out in like a week or two and then not watch it for another year, not remember. So these two shows are doing it smart and being, I think, in the conversation longer.
Right. I would rather have like half seasons, or even, I mean, if they want to like separate them as separate seasons, have like short ones and have them come out more frequently. I'm definitely more of a fan of that style. In that way, you know, if I want to binge all of it, it's not taking up a whole like 3 weeks of my life.
Yeah. I think I remember that happening with like The Walking Dead and Breaking Bad forever ago.
Yeah, because, and I think they did the same thing, at least, you know, Breaking Bad did, like, they broke it up, I think, also just for straight up Emmy consideration as well.
Oh, did they?
And that one was a little bit different in that, you know, it's obviously linear television and still weekly, but they were aware of the binging world. And same thing, Breaking Bad got a lot more viewers because it was on Netflix those earlier seasons.
Right, yeah.
Definitely.
So I think there's some more hype with those. So I'm excited for this because I think it'll increase hype for Kimmy Schmidt when it comes back in January, I believe, which is,
oh my god,
ways away.
It seems so far away.
Yeah. But yeah, so this one, it picks up where season three left off and really builds more on some characters like finding some good self-realization.
I think that was the major focus of the season, is that, you know, all of these characters are really coming into their own as adults. Like, you get, you know, I think all of the characters are kind of childish in the beginning, and that mirrors kind of how Kimmy is coming into the world, and they think that they have so much to teach her, but she also has so much to teach them, and now they're kind of past the point of, not past the point of teaching each other, but they're past the point of, you know, the newness.
Yeah. And it's the ball's in their court for them to accept and improve themselves in their self-improvement.
Right. And like take responsibility for what's going on around them.
Yeah. And we did see a lot of self-improvement. Kimmy's big thing was, yeah, she's a grown-up now. She's got a big job. She's an adult in this tech company.
She gets sent to a conference.
Yes. Breaking some paradigms. Paradigms.
Paradigms.
If you know how to pronounce things correctly. I don't think I do.
She gets a pair of dimes. Right? That was an episode.
Was it?
No.
I believe you. That's, like I said, watch them quickly and then never watch them again, which I should watch more. I should watch them doubly.
But there's things to watch.
Let me, I need to preface this before we get into the, or before I get into the conversation, is that I have not seen a single other season of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I watched,
which is shameful.
It is shameful. I've seen episodes here and there. My college roommate watched it a lot. So I, like, this is the first time I just sat down and went through it, binged it. And I enjoyed it a lot. It's not like I refused to watch it before this. It was just I
wasn't sure if it was for you.
It's not even that. What I saw, I loved. It's just like there was so much to watch, and it just kind of kept getting swept under the rug. And
I still haven't watched Mr. Robot yet, so I feel that, yeah. Man. Yeah, exactly.
Also very good.
Exactly. Like
amazing.
You know the shows that are good, and it's like, oh, cool, Mr. Robot wins an Emmy. Great, cool. I'll check that out. And then it's like another season of a show that you already are super into comes out. Then it's like, oh, I'm going to watch this first, yes. And then that. Oh, wait. And now it's 4 years later since it came out.
Oh my God, my Netflix, Hulu, HBO, you know, all everything is bearing down on me.
Yeah.
Everyone's got this crazy backlog of things they need to watch, and Kimmy Schmidt just happened to be on that list.
The thing I like about Kimmy Schmidt, though, is that it's 30 minutes. And so it's one of those ones that you can kind of sneak in if you really don't have that much time.
It's very digestible.
Yeah. It's a good, like, going to bed show type of thing. Like, oh, cool, my teeth is brushed. Oh, but I got something to watch. Let me bring up the old laptop.
My teeth is brushed.
My teeth is all brushed.
I need to get a Kimmy Schmidt lesson from you guys who are seasoned.
Seasoned Schmidters.
Ruh-roh.
The old Schmidt heads lady, over here. The old lady with the funny voice. What is her story?
So that is Lillian. And Lillian is their landlord, Titus and Kimmy.
Okay.
Titus and Kimmy are roommates. Kimmy got out of a bunker that she was in for 15 years.
I know about all that.
You watched the opening sequence?
Yeah, I watched the title sequence.
Oh, so we talked about some jokes coming like back in Arrested Development. This one did some funny, like, you know, remember that? In that the guy in the theme song showed up in an episode.
Yes, I loved that. Like, especially because it was so weird. Like, he was like, that means I get his hairbrush collection. Yeah. You're like, okay.
Because, and also, let's talk about the season in general and some episodes. That was in the third episode, I believe, which was very strange and wasn't paced like a Kimmy Schmidt episode, but was paced like anything else that came from Netflix, and that it's like a Making a Murderer show. It was like, what?
Yeah, it's all these like who is DJ Slizzard Netflix documentaries that are really, really popular now. And it's like, it segues perfectly from the previous episode where they basically discover this fake Netflix platform.
Was it Houseflix?
Start binging Houseflix. And then it goes into this like Making a Murderer true crime documentary, which I found so hilarious. And it, being someone who like just started watching the series, is actually pretty informative to see that little story play out.
Right, because you get a lot of background on like the person who was holding these women in this bunker.
Who is DJ Slizzard?
Exactly. Oh my God. It makes me so sad that John Hamm is a villain, but I also kind of love it. But everyone should watch Mad Men. Just saying.
But he's, since Mad Men, has been a great comedy actor.
So true.
Which is just, I think, so against type, and maybe just shows what he wanted to do when he first got into acting. Like, I don't know if he did improv or something, or he just likes to read something silly.
Maybe. I mean, I think, too, that because he played such a serious character for such a long time, and there's also, I don't remember if it's on Netflix or on another streaming platform, but there is this other show, like mini series that he's in with
I know what you're talking, the one with Daniel Radcliffe or
yes
something.
The one with Daniel Radcliffe, and they're in the middle of Russia, and it's very strange but very entertaining as well.
He picks his stuff well, but like he just kind of picks what he wants, because I think now at least he's getting some good residual checks from Mad Men, just from being on Netflix. And
not only that, but he's things. Like he's a great actor. He's shown that he has a lot of range, and I think now that, you know,
And you know, maybe he has that current stream, he can be rangy.
Yeah.
Free range ham.
Great.
So that was a cool and silly episode. I was very confused, because I was like, is this Kimmy Schmidt? What are we watching? And then what, Titus shows up in like a fake cutscene type of thing.
Right.
That is in like those docuseries that was also made fun of in Arrested Development that Tobias was in. Mm-hmm. What if that'd be a good crossover. What if Tobias and Titus, which already sounds like a show.
If they made an Arrested Development Kimmy Schmidt cinematic universe, TV universe like the Marvel shows, I would eat that shit up.
That would be wonderful.
But Tobias has to be in his never nude jorts.
Oh, of
absolutely.
Course.
They would need to have a conversation between Titus and Tobias about the never nude concept. Because
yes.
I feel like you could totally write some hilarious Titus lines about.
Because then Titus could be like, oh, well, I've just been wearing those for years. Those have been my swim trunks and nice suit pants and everything else.
You know what would be great, though, is if they kind of, if in this imaginary universe where we have this crossover, if they hearkened back to, I want to say it was the very first episode where Tobias is on that like party, that like gay party ship, and he's the pirate.
Oh, Titus is on.
That would be amazing.
Mind blown. Mind blown.
So Netflix producers, if you're listening, again, we got golden ideas. So
we churn out some great ideas on this podcast.
We sent one to Disney last week. And
we know you're listening.
And now we're sending one to you Netflix folks. This season also like was very relevant. It was very relevant in some of the conversations that we had. There was a Me Too episode, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a sexual harassment episode, which also very timely.
And dealing with Zan's pregnancy.
Yes. So a lot of stuff, a lot of nice stuff. Did you think they touched on some of these hard subjects well, Miss Beth?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that it's always difficult to talk about, you know, uncomfortable subjects and things that, you know, have been in the shadows for so long. I thought they did a really good job of, you know, bringing these hard social issues to the forefront. And I think that also comes across when, I guess this is in the last season, when the neighborhood is being gentrified. You have Lillian fighting against that. And then you also have like the Redskins talk and that sort of thing. So I think that really they're continuing the work that they've kind of laid out. The writing is so smart and how they discuss it and approach it and, you know, make it more digestible and make it humorous and satirical.
It's quick and quippy.
Yeah, they seem to have this like great formula of lampooning this like this cultural or like this social movement without strictly and directly making fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. It doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah, not at all. And I really liked that about watching it through for the first time. I was very impressed by that. Not that I wasn't expecting to be impressed, but you know.
Just want to say thank you, Tina Fey.
Yeah, Tina, you're doing great. And what I'm sad about is that this show will be going soon-ish. I think what I've been reading up of, like first reading up when part two comes out, is that this, I think, might be the last season.
When the second part of the season comes out?
Apparently that'll be the end of it.
Oh, that makes me very sad. I really enjoy this show.
It's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, it really is. And it, you know, it's not only a breath of fresh air, but it's, you know, it makes you think, but not too hard, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it'll be sad to see it go because, you know, what it does also does, like you said, I do like how they lampooned like some of the evil in the world. And one of my favorite things that they lampooned.
I went to the petting zoo and the lampooned.
That was a Patrick level dad joke.
Good stuff, Mason. But they really touch upon kind of the, you know, a lot of the stuff that we're seeing in the political culture, whether it be with their president, but you know, and we won't even get to that dude, but how like kind of like some toxic masculinity stuff can like overpower your ideas of the world and see.
Right, and I
see
think
these dudes with Bobby Moynihan's character.
Not only that, but I really think that, you know, Jacqueline has been kind of a bastion of what toxic masculinity can do to a woman and like how that can affect somebody throughout their whole life. And not, I guess she's not only a symbol for women, but anybody who feels oppressed by that sort of attitude. But a lot in this season, she says, oh, I've only ever heard it that way before. She'll like turn the phrase. And I think that really speaks to that subject.
Yeah.
And is really interesting.
Yeah, because I think that's how we've seen it in past seasons. Like, and I see what you're saying, of that, like, Jacqueline has just been yelled at by men.
Not only yelled at, but expected to be a certain way in order to, quote unquote, be successful in the world that she wants to be in.
Yeah. And now we see the flip side in this season with Bobby Moynihan's character is just like a very angry, like, internet troll type of dude who's just like, women should be like this, that, and this. And I don't understand. I'm doing this, that, and this. So why aren't women coming to me type of thing? I like how they kind of touched upon for like, it was like quickly a very serious beat, which I think was just straight up a conversation with him. And I think, yeah, and Kimmy, of just the world doesn't owe this to you type of thing. And like making it very real for Bobby, whatever his character's name is.
Right. I definitely agree. I think that, you know, at some point, like all people and all, like all of these characters need to realize that like nobody owes them anything. Like you have to earn what you get. And I think that again is like about the growth of these characters in the season.
Yeah. And we see that happen to our favorite characters and then see them yell at villains that don't think so.
Also, I really hope that Mikey and Titus get back together.
Yeah. And that's the other like storyline that has kind of, pervade through, because I don't think we got any straight up like really overarching storylines other than that the Reverend is coming back, he's making a documentary, and Kimmy's gonna try to stop it and tell her story. But every other episode was pretty like fragmented, could stand on its own type of thing.
Yeah,
would you say,
like, Mason? Contained stories pretty much across the board except for that, yeah, that ongoing plot that this dude is coming back.
Yeah.
So scary.
But then, like, I guess the other one that did go through is that Titus is trying to impress Mikey by making TV shows. Like, that's the only other thing.
By making fake TV shows.
Yeah.
What was it called? The Capist?
The Capist.
Yes, The Capist.
That was so funny. And then Greg Kinnear's, like, all over it and wants to actually make it. Love that.
Oh, yeah. Greg Kinnear was in an episode. I forgot about that.
He was in two episodes.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because when he's the one who proposes... what is it? YouTube Brown. He has this
YouTube Brown
contract for literally anything.
Yeah. And like that was another good like timely joke, is that they just make fun of, oh, there's just too much TV. Like we're talking about, oh yeah, here's this cool show that got buzzy reviews on this internet channel that I've never heard of. Yeah, like, YouTube Brown, House Flips.
I just Googled non-threatening white guy and his his face popped up or whatever.
And yeah, there's a great quip from like I think vulture.com that I read earlier, that the Capist, yeah, it sounds like some show that's already in its third season on like CBS All Access.
Oh, it really does.
Something like that. That I'm sure there are shows like that on CBS All Access, I feel like, though. What is CBS All Access?
The Somethingist is like a very...
Well, The Mentalist was like probably the most famous one.
A procedural
drama.
Which
I did really like.
Yeah. Procedural drama where person has a power and he... stops people.
Yeah. Person has a special thing that helps him solve crimes.
Yes.
I think the newest one of those is Reverie. I saw a promo for that when I was watching TV with my dad the other day, and he was like, yeah, I came into an episode halfway through and was just like very confused. And I was like, Dad, I definitely understand. I know where you're coming from.
That's the thing. People like their cop shows. People like the cops.
Mom likes NCIS.
Mama liked the cop. So we got some fun. We got some fun from the season. Mm-hmm. Are y'all pumped for when January 29th comes?
Yes.
And for what Kimmy do y'all Schmidt. Think will happen for Kimmy Schmidt? Because I believe the last episode was Busy Phillips as Lillian's lover's daughter tries to get some money.
And now Lillian controls the trust in a surprise turn of events during the will reading.
Yes.
And so, spoiler. Sorry, guys.
And this shows that Lillian matters to Mr. Artie, which is his name. Yeah, Artie's his name. I'm remembering characters. But then the other one is that...
Oh, side note. Best joke in the whole season is when Lillian is arguing with her husband or whoever that guy is. She's like, I'm not saying I agree with his politics, I'm just saying those are the best steaks I ever had.
Yes,
that made me laugh
so
hard.
Funny.
Let's backtrack for a second. What was your favorite
that
quip?
Was my favorite joke.
What was your favorite quip? Because there was so many just funny like one-off lines that
oh my gosh, there are so many.
I think my favorite visual gag was during like the paradigm shift conference episode, and just the Stan guy. like the robot old man. I don't know. I just thought that was very funny.
Where Lillian tries to hug him.
Yeah. And like she's just flirting with him and is like, oh, wow. Everything seems to be working for Lillian. Oh, yeah, Lillian. And then it's a hologram.
Oh, I totally, like, I don't know. When that scene started, I definitely did not think that that guy was real because it was too good to be true.
That's true. But it's like, what's the payoff? What will make it so funny? What will make you giggle? So I enjoyed that bit a lot. Oh, there were so many others that just happened too quick that are too quick to remember.
I'm trying to think. Is this season the one where Andy Cohen calls? Oh, no.
It is not.
No, that was last season when Russ becomes beautiful. Another excellent David Cross. They can't do a crossover. Because cross David Cross is over. Already. Dang. I know. Sad.
They could work around it, I guess.
Yeah,
it'd
they be could
so
just
strange.
They could have Ron Howard narrate it and be like, he looks oddly like a character from the other show.
Have it framed in the Arrested Development style.
Right.
So I can't think of my favorite bit. I love Kimmy and Zan's relationship though.
Who's Zan?
Zan is
Yeah, you didn't get there, did you? Jacqueline's daughter. Stepdaughter.
Stepdaughter. Ex-stepdaughter.
Okay. Ex-stepdaughter. So a girl with black hair.
Yes, who okay. Kimmy used to quote-unquote nanny, sort of, when she first got to New York.
Got it.
Yeah, so we got to see her as she dealt with a pregnancy.
So yeah, I guess I would say I kind of, if we're talking about just quips in general, I think Jacqueline's are consistently the best.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing. Maybe the quips you can't remember, but you can remember the moments. And there's some tender moments.
There are indeed.
We got a little bit of time left. So in our time left, what are y'all excited for? What do y'all think will happen in the second part that will come out in January?
I have no basis to guess like what's going to happen because I don't know the like, you know what I'm saying?
You don't know the backstory well enough to make a prediction.
Yeah, I really just don't know like what the character, like the decision making of the characters is.
The Reverend.
He could potentially manipulate other people into getting paroled, but somehow I don't see that happening. I think maybe his fiance will come back. You know, the woman, the crazy woman who tried to get Kimmy to sign the divorce papers.
Played by Laura
Dern.
No,
that was the girlfriend. A.D. Bryant played the girlfriend when they got out of the bunker.
That was a fun cameo.
That was a fun cameo. I enjoy A.D. Bryant and her style of comedy.
Her ha-has and ho-hos.
Yes, indeed, indeed.
At least that's what I was doing as ha-ha and ho-ho.
Seems like a very accurate representation of your laugh.
What comedy we have here. Yeah, so because the last shot was someone photographing Kimmy, right?
Yes, yeah. So the very last scene is, I want to say, I can't remember exactly, but I want to say it was maybe Russian or like some kind of like Eastern European accented person, and the subtitle just says target is acquired, ready to move on to phase two.
Yeah.
And then it cuts off, and so I'm interested to see whether that is someone the Reverend has deployed, whether it's even focused on Kimmy or it's some other character, and we're gonna have some kind of strange kidnapping
and some kooky stuff to happen. Yeah, because like, what if she just gets kidnapped again and has to get out of another bunker?
I don't know if they'll put her in another bunker.
The show is so unpredictable. We just know that none of our predictions will predict it. Yeah.
Right. We're very unsure at this point.
Because I also wasn't expecting an entire Beauty and the Beast play or an entire Making of a Murderer episode.
Mm-hmm. I really love season. When they give Titus the reins, yeah. Just kind of in general.
That was such a random episode. So
it,
yeah.
It was, but he grew.
He did grow. So there is some growing a lot for the cast. So I'm excited to see how they grow. Definitely no growth in the Arrested Development department. But Mason, as this was kind of your first Kimmy Schmidt stuff, did you grow as a viewer?
I grew as a fan of the show. I grew into a fan of the show.
Well, as we wrap things up, Mason, how can our other listeners grow as fans of our show?
You can subscribe to us on pretty much any service. If you want to hit us or hit a subscribe, if you want to hit us, come over and bring your baseball bat.
Not while I'm here.
Yeah.
Don't sucker punch us after meeting Rebel Alley.
Yeah. If you hit subscribe to us, leave us a review or anything, that'd be very great. We are slowly but surely growing.
Especially on iTunes. One of the podcasts I listen to talks about how they have a very funky algorithm and that it helps you get recognized if you give the podcast 5 stars and write a review.
Mm-hmm.
Funky algorithm also sounds like a great band.
Indeed.
Yep.
So I hope you get some funky algorithms over to us and then we can be in a band and pay for some cool instruments or whatever the heck. But until next time, this has been Miss Beth Marcinko.
Bye, guys.
This has been Mason Moreau.
Peace out.
And I've been Patrick Baylor.
This has been Son of a Ginger.
On the next Son of a Ginger. Mason watches the E3 conference. Beth goes home, wondering if she even enjoyed any of this.
We'll see.
And Patrick hopes that he didn't ruin everything.